Okay, good evening. We're beginning on chapter 9, Halacha Zayin. We did it in about 2 or 3 minutes yesterday, but I want to go over some foundational principles we need to know because the rest of the chapter is all based on this area of basically a similar case. It all can be found in the first parak of Bava Metzia. So basically the case is that two people are grabbing onto talis or some article. They have an equal claim on a given object, on a given movable object. We're saying that Beis Din is going to split the object between the two. They both swear that they don't own not less than half of it is their claim, and they'll each end up getting half. What we need to understand, though, here is that it's not so simple that we simply split. When two people have a claim, we just split it right down the middle. So step one, we need to understand the reason that this is split down the middle is because there's a specific detail in this case that, for example, if it's a talus that's being gripped, each person, Reuven and Shimon, both are gripping it from the end. They're both simply gripping the lip of the talus on each end. In other words, we're excluding where they're gripping further along towards the body of the talus. We'll get to that specific halacha of what that would be later, but you'll see that it's not so simple. We don't simply split the entire thing down the middle in that case. We're splitting it down the middle, but that is where both Reuven and Shimon are grabbing the talus from the edge of the talus. So that's piece one of this case. Generally speaking, what's happening here is that we know that to acquire something, you need to make a kinyan. So we're talking about a kinyan hagbah, kinyan of lifting something. Both Reuven and Shimon are claiming it presumably through lifting. Now that means that the talus had to either be hefker to begin with, in other words, it was ownerless, or another example of what could have occurred in terms of the scenario would be that it was found in a public place, and therefore the actual owner would have given up, would have despaired of reacquiring it, so therefore they can claim it now. So this information, I think, hopefully should be enough. If we miss any point we need, we'll fill it in as we go along.
You're grabbing it at the same time?
Thanks for bringing that up. So I guess another important point to mention now is that both of them are going to think in their own mind, presumably. It's possible they both believe that Reuven thinks he picked it up first, Shimon thinks he picked it up first. We as Beis Din think that it's possible they both picked it up at the same time. So when we split it down the middle, that actually could be really what it truly is the fair din. Now, we're excluding a case where the claim isn't where they both found at the same time. Rather, a case where Reuven says, I wove this garment, said the entire garment, and Shimon says, I wove this garment, the entire garment. In that case, it's different because we know one of them is lying. There's one person here who's trying to deceive us because they both couldn't have possibly woven the entire garment. One knows whether or not he wove it or not. Whereas by picking up, as we're mentioning, it could be that they really think they picked it up first. So in the case where they are, where there's a deceiver, there's a whole argument about how exactly we should deal with it. Tosfos seems to say that really what we would do in the case is the case where Reuven says he wove it and Shimon says he wove it. Tosfos would say, we'll basically threaten. The idea is we don't want them to make a false oath, but we're going to say that they have to make an oath. And presumably in that case, since the deceiver knows we know that one of them is deceiving, he'll hopefully be intimidated and back down. Whereas Rashi says we take the talus in that case and put it away until Eliyahu comes. Yeah.
Until
Eliyahu comes. So in this case, though, we're not doing that. In this case, we are dividing it. The point is that it could be that they're both being honest. There's not necessarily a deceiver. Okay.
But we also said after teaching, pick it up. Remember, even when they find both pick it up at the same time, they each have to pick it up. I own at least half of this
time. Very good. Not less than half. Okay. With that said, since we did read the words yesterday, I think we'll just go on to Halacha Ches. Okay, so we're going to see a little more in depth. The variation of the case we just spoke at. Reuven and Shimon are both claiming that they found it in one way or another. So let's see. Zeh omer kula sheli. One, let's say Reuven is saying all of this garment or this whatever it is finding is mine. Vezeh omer chetzi sheli. And Shimon, for whatever reason, is only claiming half of it. Perhaps he thinks they picked it up at the same time, whatever it is. Again, Reuven's claiming all of it. Shimon's claiming half of it. Ha'omer kula sheli, who we named Reuven. Reuven, who claimed that all of it's his. What does he do? Yishava she'ein lo ba pachus mishlosha chalakim. Reuven's going to claim He well, he claims he owns all of it, but he's going to swear. We'll make him swear only that he that there's no less than 3/4 of it that belongs to him. V'ha'omer chetz yishali Shimon, who's claiming that only half of it belongs to him, yishava she'ein lo ba'pachos me'ruvia. He'll claim that there isn't less to him in this garment than 1/4. V'zedno tel shalosha chalakim, and the Reuven who swore in terms of 3 chalakim will take 3 chalakim. And Shimon, who swore in terms of a ruvia, v'zedno tel ruvia, he'll take 1/4. Now, in terms of just following the logic in our minds, I'd like to give a general rule of how what's happening, just so we see it. Basically, this is how I follow it, at least. So let's speak it like this. You have to look at first, what is undisputed? In other words, is there any part of the garment that's undisputed? In this case, Reuven claimed all of it. Shimon only claimed half. That means the other half, exactly, the other half is undisputed. Now, that other half we put already on Shimon's side. That's his. We look at the undisputed part of the claim. We put that to Reuven. We look at now at the disputed part of the claim, the claim that that Shimon's saying he owns half of, which overlaps with Reuven's claim. And we take that and we divide it in half. And so that's how you get 1/4 to Shimon, and the half that was undisputed plus 1/4 to Reuven gets 3/4 to Reuven, and we have how the, we see how the math adds up. Now the Rambam's going to add a point here. Mikan, from here we should know, Atzal Lamed, you should learn, L'kol ha'nishbayin litol, anyone who's swearing in order to take, bein shavua kala, bein shavua chamura, whether it's a light or a more heavy oath, she'eino nishba al ma shetoin, ella, he's only going to swear upon the claim, al ma shenoitel, only in terms of how much he's actually going to take, afal pi shetoin yosa, even though he claims more. So basically, Reuven claims all of it, but he's only swearing in terms of 3/4, because that's all we're willing to give him. Likewise for Shimon, he claims half, but he's only going to swear according to 1/4, and because that's what ultimately we're going to give him. Okay, if there aren't any questions, we'll go on to the next halacha. Okay, so let's go on to Tess. Hayushnayim adukin betalias. Adukin is a, for our purposes at least, a synonym for uchzin. So two are holding on or clutching a talis. Zeoimir Kulasheli Ruvain, let's say Ruvain, says all of it's mine. Vizeoimir Kulasheli Shimon also this time is saying it's all mine. Zen notel ad makam shiado magaas. Vizen notel ad makam shiada magaas. Vishar chalukin bishava achen shenishbayin. Now here's what we introduced initially. We said in halachat Zayin, the important point to make was that each was holding from the edge of the talus, not further in along the body of the talus. In that case, we divide the whole thing in half. Here in Halacha 9, the Rambam is pointing out, and this is in the Gemara, that if you say Reuven, rather than gripping the edge, literally the lip of the talus, he grips a foot, say, or however, whatever length inwards on the talus. So that's all that is basically in his hand. He's actually going to get that entire portion. All the way from the lip to where his hand is, he gets.
Saying that's undisputed.
That's undisputed. Shimon, likewise, the same idea. If he's half a foot in, he'll get that entire half a foot. It's only what's between the two hands, right? So Reuven on one side and Shimon on the other hand. We divide the space in between the two hands equally. But if Reuven has gripped more than Shimon, Reuven will actually, in the end, get more than Shimon, although we divide it equally based on the fact we only divided the disputed part, what was between the hands. Whereas between the lip and the hand, that's we're saying that's undisputed. V'yesh l'kol echad l'galgel al chaveiro sh'kol ma sh'natal b'din natal. So there's a whole machlokes we've shown him here about exactly where the shavua has to go on, if it goes on, if really you have to even swear from the lip of the talus to the hand. But the Rambam saying no, really you don't have to, there's no oath directly on that part, but there's a concept of being megagel or a shavua. So what that means is that once Beis Din is obligating a particular person to swear, then we can add in other elements that he has to swear about. It's learned out from the Gemara in Sota. I haven't seen Yevamos, a case where a husband warns his wife after Nisuin's done, they're already married. He says, don't isolate yourself with a certain person. She goes ahead and does it. And he takes her to the Kohen, and she has to swear that nothing happened. Now, once she's already swearing based on this particular set of circumstances, this mechanism or principle, he can even make her swear on previous instances. So, for example, he could, in theory, make her swear even when they were engaged. What he did, was there anything going on? So, again, once a person's chayiv to swear, obligated to swear on because of a certain set of circumstances, you can extend what they have to swear about because they're already obligated to make an oath. So in this case, we're seeing basically Rambam's learning that the only have to swear on the disputed part from hand between hand to hand, but each claimant, Reuben can make Shimon swear that what he's grasping is actually belongs to him. Yeah, and Shimon of course as well in parallel to Reuben. So are there any questions?
I'm just not clear.
Yeah.
Even though one of them grabs quite inwards into, what if it is disputed? What if the other guy says, you may have grabbed that, but the whole thing is mine?
So,
doesn't matter what the claim is?
So it is disputed. I think we said really ultimately they're both claiming all of it's mine. Maybe we shouldn't use the word undisputed, but we're treating it as though it's undisputed. It is disputed.
He's lost his claim on the part that's grabbed.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And but because he does think that the person's lying, he can make him swear even about that. So we're going to see next the halacha where one has a or soon if not next where a majority of the actual thing and how that works out. We're about 10 minutes.
That's perfect.
Okay, so record. Okay, let's continue. We just finished halacha tes, and we're going to continue with halacha yud in chapter 9. We did briefly introduce this concept already, but we'll read it inside. Hayazeh oiches bechutin shebesfas hatalis. Reuven grabs onto the threads at the edge of the talis. V'zeh v'chutin shebesvas ha'echeres. And Shimon grabs the other side on the edge. Chalukin kula v'shava. We divide it equally. Acher shenishbayin. This is basically explaining halacha zayin, that they are each grabbing simply at the edges of the talis. V'chol chaluka hamura kan l'damim. Rambam's pointing out that when we're saying that we divide whatever it is that people are claiming together,
we're not destroying garments.
We're not destroying garments. We're not killing animals. We're just going to sell it if otherwise we would devalue whatever it is. So let's see it inside. Lo shiyafsidu atzmo shel keli. We don't devalue. Do something that will devalue the vessel. Oh, shall talis, or the talis, oh, she and misu habehema, or they would just kill the animal.
So no animals were killed.
It's always good to point out. Okay, we'll go on to halacha yud. Aleph.
So, I mean, is there a possibility as well that one could say, well, I want it and I'll pay you half?
Oh, buy out his partner.
Yeah.
I don't see why not if they would agree to it.
So basically, if they're getting half the value each of them.
If they agree to that.
No, but once the decision's made,
I don't.
Could say, I'll buy.
I don't see why not. I mean,
things can have sentimental value. Because, like, people go to court over dogs for far more than the value of the
dog. Sure. Okay.
Life's enough.
Yid Aleph. Haya ha'echad oichez es kula. One person is gripping basically the entire thing. Vizem is avik. Just like the angel of Esau wrestled with Yaakov, so too this fellow, Shimon, is being misavik imo with Reuven, who's gripping the whole keli, basically. Vinisalaba. And Shimon's, you could say, is hanging from it. He's just barely holding on. Hare, what do we do? Zu bechezkes ha'oiches es kula. We presume that this entire thing belongs to Reuven. So, if it's clear that one person has basically complete control over it, it's still in his chazaka. We still assume that it's his. Okay, halacha yud beis. Ba'u shnehem adukin ba. Again, we say adukin is like ha'uchzin.
Yeah, grabbing, holding.
Two people are grasping onto something. When
gets it from the hand of the other. So let's say Shimon grabs it out of Reuven's hand. But here's the chiddush, bifneinu, in front of the court.
Whoa.
Okay, so they came in, presumably holding the garment together. Let's say it's like halacha zayin. And all of a sudden, Shimon rips it out from Reuven. V'shasa kasheni. And Reuven, who doesn't have it anymore, is simply quiet. Afal pi shechazer, even though afterwards he subsequently, v'tzuveach, he cries out, in motzien osam yado. At the end of the day, we leave it with Shimon. We don't give it back to Reuven, because when Reuven delayed in saying anything, we're reading into it. Rambam's going to say, Kivin Sheshasak, since Reuven was quiet, Tehila, initially, he hesitated. Harizeh Kamoide, lo. This is as though he agreed initially. His initial reaction was that it really was Shimon's, and he was okay with it. He acknowledged that it was Shimon's. Now, Chazer Hasheni, if after thinking, he grabs it back. Now both Reuven and Shimon have a portion again. Afal pi she harishon soveach. Oh, sorry, he took it completely away from the other one. Afal pi she harishon soveach mitechila vaad soif chalikin. Even though he's crying the entire time since it took out, there was no hesitation the second time around. We still divide them. This is a pretty... I saw a few different approaches here. I think the most simple thing to explain it would be as follows. Basically, remember that what's happening here. Both Reuven and Shimon come into the court, and both are grabbing onto it. Now, we don't know. Maybe it belongs to... The whole thing belongs to Reuven. Maybe the whole thing belongs to Shimon. Maybe both of them have a portion in it. But at the end of the day, as we said before, once Shimon grabs it away from Reuven, we're going to say, since Reuven was quiet, it is as though he acknowledged that it was really Shimon's. However, when Reuven takes it back from Shimon, I think the most simple way to say it is that no longer, although before being the initial hesitation, we were going to read into it and say that he was acknowledging that it really belonged to Shimon, once he goes so far as to take it back, we no longer look at it as though he acknowledged it at all. And therefore, we're back in their initial case where they both presumably have an ownership over the property. So we divide it, even though in the end it's completely in Reuven's hand. Are there any...
There's a big note here.
Yeah, there's lots of different approaches.
Yeah, you're going through Zera's...
Yeah, and the Gemara.
They're fighting all day over this talus. One has to go to the washroom. Is it like a timeout?
it's
like this.
So when I was reading up on this, there's one very interesting concept. Where it's like the Elim Gavra. It's like the strongest is going to win. Under certain circumstances, there's arguments about what these circumstances are. Basin basically says it's better that we don't get involved here. We're not really sure maybe who would really own it, and we'll let whoever has a stronger weaker bladder, or stronger claim, we'll take it out. Now, as I was reading, it was explained that really, although it sounds a bit survival of the fittest here, so it makes you pause, the idea is that ultimately twofold. One is that the real owner will try harder. Why? Because at the end of the day, the real owner knows that at the end of the day, a proof will come his way. Whereas the thief, he's only going to invest so much into trying to go after it, because at the end of the day, he knows that at any moment it can be taken away from him when there is proof that's brought. So,
did you say
he has to take an oath? I kind of jumped to a different case. Are you asking this case here?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're presuming it's going to go back like halacha zayin, as it were. If it started like halacha zayin, we're saying at the end of the day, it's going back to they have to both swear.
Because that may be why he doesn't fight so hard, because he doesn't really want
to
take.
So there's the way. So in other words, there are different approaches to what the silence means. It could be, maybe you should interpret it that he just figures, I'm in the presence of the judges, like, I'm not going to start a fight. But at the end of the day, it seems that we're not learning that way. We don't presume that. And it's not until, just to simply explain, until Reuven pulls it back again, after, although he was initially quiet, that we believe he wasn't actually acknowledging that it belonged to Shem.
This portion grabbed is supposed to indicate to the outside how much each party owns. But it's really, like, the stronger of the two, it's a tug of war.
So I don't know that. So I, the concept I brought here, I may have been a bit peripheral. It was interesting, just in that it's something that we do. I don't know that it applies necessarily. I saw it a little bit discussed around this case, if I remember correctly, but I don't know that it's so much the push and grab per se. It's really we believe that both have a either one may have a portion, or they both have a portion. It's simply that when Reuven's quiet, when it gets taken away from him, shtika koda, that well, wait a second, maybe that was an acknowledgement that it wasn't his. In other words, why is he just so passive about it? In other words, if he wasn't passive initially, even though it was pulled away from him, as it were, the stronger one took it, we wouldn't penalize. Okay, let's move on to Halacha Yud Gimel, and maybe we can discuss the whole thing afterwards. Okay. Ba'u Shnehem Adukin, again, the word Adukin, like Uchsin. So two fellows grab a talis, but talis. So basically we have the case, let's say, of Zion. Okay, two people, Reuven and Shimon, are holding the edges of a talis. They come to court. We do the din of Zion. They both swear. They both take half. They're going to both take half the value. Now they leave the court, and we told them v'chalku estamir, that they should divide the money. Okay, yatzu v'yakso. They left and they came back v'chazru. Vaharihi, so it's a day later, whatever it is. Vaharihi tachas yad echa. Now this time, it's under one of them. In other words, before Reuven and Shimon both had it. This time, only say Reuven has it. So vaharihi tachas yad echad mihen. So zetoin hodali v'nistalik mimena. Reuven claims what happened in the meantime is that Shimon, in the meantime, acknowledged that it really belonged to Reuven, and he basically withdrew. Well, on the other hand, Shimon's going to claim, Shimon doesn't have an Ezrishus anymore, V'zetoin, Secharte lo, I rented it. Did I read this correctly?
Shemechartiv lo.
Okay, I have a different gear set. So the other one is going to claim that it was that he's rented, he rented it to him.
Sold it to him.
Different gears. Okay. Or sold it to him. Other way, right? Oh, nisgaber alai v'chatfa. Or Reuven
overpowered
him and took it.
He chopped it.
And he took it. So in other words, Shimon saying, why does Reuven have it? Because I did a transaction with him. We have two different gears. One, I rented it to him. I sold it to him. I gave it to him with permission because he was. So selling doesn't make much sense to me. I'm not gonna lie, but maybe he didn't pay him yet. Okay, fine. Anyways, Shimon saying Reuven has it. Let's go in both. Because I rented it to him, but now he's claiming that it's his, or because I sold it to him and he didn't pay me, or he simply took it from me. Shimon saying there's a good explanation for why he has it. I didn't give it to him willingly.
So asking the court to reinstitute.
Shimon, yeah, exactly. So what do we do? Hamotzi mechavero. I love her eye. This is really the line. If we didn't get it yet, this is what we have to sort of being home now that we're finishing this parak. Okay, let's just do a quick review since we do have a few minutes here. What's the general rule? Okay, by metalfilin, we have Reuven and Shimon. If Reuven has some sort of metalfilin, what are we excluding? Let's say we're excluding a house, we're excluding a field. We're talking about movables. If Reuven has something in his on him. If Shimon wants to take it, what does he have to do? He has to actually bring proof, right? So we're saying this principle. Hamotzi mechavero, the one who wants to take a metalplin from his fellow, alav, he who wants to take it from his fellow, alav haraya, on him is the burden of proof. And there, Shimon can claim all he wants, but really by Torah law, he can't take it from Reuven unless he brings proof. Now we added in Halacha Aleph, section the third part of Halacha Aleph. No, it was Perek Aleph Halacha Gimel. We talked about a rabbinic law that if Shimon claims that Reuven has something of his, and Reuven says you're just speaking, it's nothing, you have no real claim, Reuven rabbinically has to make a hesis, a shvuah hesis. He has to make an oath that it is actually his. But at the end of the day, Shimon cannot take it. Still, even rabbinically, assuming Reuven makes the oath, Shimon cannot take it. Okay, so we have two layers here. We have the general Torah law. Hamotzi mechavero alav haraya. Shimon wants to take it from Reuven. Shimon has the burden of proof on Shimon. Now, because of the rabbinic law, Reuven has to make an oath that it's actually his. That's the basis for almost everything we've been discussing. So the same thing is happening here. Now, although Reuven and Shimon initially both had it, at the end of the day, since Shimon no longer has it and Reuven has it, we're treating it like they're coming in again. In other words, there's no longer any, as it were, physical proof that Shimon has a portion of it. And as we don't know what happened. Maybe Reuven did pay Shimon, right? Maybe Reuven did pay Shimon. Shimon's now lying. So in as much as that, it's all based simply on the claim again. There's no physical proof that Shimon has a motzi mechaver lav haraya. Shimon has to bring proof again, and if he doesn't bring proof, Reuven gets to keep it. Ve'im lo hevi raya, and if Shimon can't bring proof, yishava zeh shehi kula v'yado hesis shehi shelo v'yafter. So as we said, we're just following out our formula. There are binek hesis, and so Reuven makes the hesis, and he's potter. V'chein kol kiyotzi b'zeh. And this is the rule in all the similar cases. Rambam finishes off.
The Tosafos doesn't agree with that.
Ah?
It says here, this is below the line. Rabbeinu lo be'er tamo lama eno ne'man lomer niskaber alai. Rambam doesn't explain why the guy doesn't believe that he overpowered me and chupped it from me.
Okay.
V'das atosavos sham divrei maskil ageris shehu ne'man v'ken katav harosh sham v'haramban v'harashba hove magid mishnah kiblu gam ken das tosavos. It's got a lot of Rishonim that go according to Tosafos here in this case.
Of this Gabra line.
Yeah.
So the Gemara itself, at least what I found, it's funny because at least what I found was the first case only where they actually have he rented it to him. And they say, so Shimon says, I rented it to Reuven. So what do you say? You say, you're a fool. You just told me he was a thief the day before, and now you're renting it to him, and you trusted him. Like, get out of here, you know? But that, so maybe it seems to me the two cases might be,
but overpowering him makes sense, and why is he not believed?
Mm-hmm.
In that situation,
yeah, you have less of a.
So you have four Rishonim going with the Tosafos that say yes, we believe him that he overpowered him. But the Rambam doesn't.
Okay.
I don't know, how would they proceed with that?
They didn't say.
I wanted to just address where we're on the point. Shelley actually raised the question yesterday on Halacha Vav, I believe it was Halacha Vav, about. We were giving a bit of a hard time in terms of when the person cuts down the tree, what happens if, so again, let's just review the case. We still have a couple minutes here. If Reuven comes and chops down a tree, he says, I'm going to chop down the tree that Shimon sold me, and he goes down and chops the tree off Shimon's property, and now the tree has become a tafelin, so we apply the rules that we just said before. And therefore, at the end of the day, if Reuven wants to make a hesis, Shimon can't take it from him. Shelley actually asked, though, what happens if at this point a raya is brought that Shimon owned this tree? That's the nuance we have to clarify. Not that he owns the land. Owning the land isn't a raya here. But if there was some sort of raya, perhaps edim, then he could get it back. Now, right, because it's a general rule, right? A motzi mechaver lav haraya. If he has a proof, he can take it back. I think though, the point we have to make clear though is that it's very different. I think the Rambam was going on about this, that what kind of proof are you going to have? In other words, you don't usually have proof on these documents.
That's what
at the
we
end
said.
Of the day.
It's usually not proof on it. It's like vegetables, fruit, trees, etc.
Very good. Exactly what you're saying. But the point is, nonetheless, if there were somehow edim, let's say, I don't know, we'll make up a case. Reuven somehow said, "I'm going to go chop down a tree," and he whispered to a couple of guys, "But I know it's not actually mine or whatnot." Then in that case, if the edim came forth, of course,
that's a bit exceptional. That you're not going to find that case.
Exactly. In other words, at the end of the day, like you're saying, the Rambam is pointing out that it just seems there won't be witnesses. But if there were, you would get it back. Okay, so we're finishing our time. Does anyone want to? Okay, have a great evening. We finished.